Do you struggle to find the time and energy to consistently eat healthy? Well, you're not alone, especially during these COVID times, but we've got a solution for you. Introducing a company from just up the street in Chicago, Illinois, Factor. Factor is the all-in-one meal delivery service that preps, cooks, and delivers fresh, never frozen, fully prepared meals directly to your door every week. With Factor, every single meal is designed by dietitians and handcrafted by world-class chefs, keeping your taste buds happy and your waistline trim. What's more, the menu changes every single week, so you never lose interest in eating healthy. Right now, Factor is offering our listeners of the Outlap F1 podcast $50 off their first 2 weeks. Just go to factor75.com, pick your meals, and use code podcast50 at checkout to claim this limited time offer. That's factor75.com, code podcast50.
John, it's James. Warm up the tires and turn up the engine because it's time to start the Outlap F1 podcast. From the Sports Talk Garage Network studio in Chicago to the best fans from around the world, join us every week for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 46 of the Outlap F1 podcast. I am your host, James, along with my wonderful co-hosts, Andy and John. Fellas, we're short one tonight. Deanna has some family matters to take care of, so we were going to carry on without her, although we will miss her a bunch, and I'm sure we'll be getting a whole bunch of stats wrong. But bright note, nobody's going to give me shit about Ferrari.
Not so bad, buddy. At least I will hold up that torch in Deanna's honor.
So where was that line in the agenda? Give shit about Ferrari. Still looking pretty for much, it.
Well, I typically put it every other bullet point. So, just fill it in as you go, boys.
Mm-hmm. Well, on a bright note, the three of us are fans of a playoff-bound team, the Chicago Bears, otherwise known as the Lance Strolls of the NFL, since they somehow have managed to fail up, baby. Thank you to the Los Angeles Rams. But yes, we have that to look forward to. But before we get into all that, I need to remind you that you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Reddit at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. And of course, you can check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. If you're new to F1, kind of a weird episode for you to start on, but we're very glad to have you. And I would suggest you go back to listen to Season 2, Episode 10, our F1 for Beginners episode. You can find out all about the sport and the teams. And of course, with Deanna coming on, you definitely need to check out her YouTube channel, Relapped. She's going back and watching every single race from like 1978. Might be wrong on the year, but it's been a long time. Pretty much the year that John was born, which seems like just yesterday.
Not quite, but I think she's getting ready to start the 1980 season now. So she's a couple seasons in. 79 was, I think, her first one on fully on YouTube, and it was quite a hoot. I enjoyed the season recap video. I laughed pretty hysterical when she says trees. You'll know what I mean when you see it. So definitely go check that out for sure.
And from what she tells me, 1980 was not a great season for Ferrari. So no offense, might not be listening to this season, Deanna, but let me know when you get to a championship season for Ferrari and I'll listen. But if you want to help support the show, make sure you visit Anchor, where you can give us a donation of $1, $5, $10, whatever you want. That's really going to help the show keep going, upgrade some equipment, and make things sound nice and professional for all you out there. And, of course, we are so pleased and honored to have Manscaped as our main sponsor. And you can go to manscaped.com and use code OUTLAP, that's one word, OUTLAP, to get 20% off and free shipping. I don't know about you two, but I use that 20% off code to buy some gifts for family members and some friends that I care about. And all of them have loved all the products. My favorite one currently, as I've mentioned before, is the foot powder. It keeps my feet nice and dry. Either one of you guys give out any Manscaped gifts for this holiday season?
No. I mean, I've been checking the mail, but I haven't gotten anything from you. So I don't know where that means that we where I stand in the hierarchy here.
I said friends I care about, John.
Oh, okay. All right. I just want to make sure I heard correctly.
I ended up giving my father the nose and ear hair trimmer. He's loved it so far. My brother-in-law has gotten some of the cologne, and I've kept the foot duster stuff to myself. So
the duster is good, and that weed whacker you mentioned is fantastic. I have one news item on the docket for tonight, boys. That is Sebastian Vettel coming out and saying that Formula One risks disappearing into irrelevance, which is kind of funny for him to say because he is slipping into irrelevance, if I do say so myself, after a terrible season. But basically, it sounds like he's worried about the politics within Formula One kind of destroying, I guess, the sport overall. And I think it's a valid point in the sense that there's a lot of politics in Formula One, a lot of money in Formula One. But that's how things have always been. So, Andy, is this something you're worried about at all, or is this just Sebastian being an old cranky man?
Well, when I first read it, and we talked about this actually in our pre-show meeting, I thought that this was kind of, you know, what you would say when, you know, you're out of the sport looking kind of back into it. But, you know, it's kind of weird that he's still in it. You know, there's been a lot of stupid money spent in Formula One over the years, and I think that that's a valid point. But I think they're taking the right steps, starting with the cost caps, getting their arms around where all these dollars and pounds and all these other, you know, currencies are going, you know, to get their arms around it. So I think they're making the right steps. We haven't seen what the result is yet because we keep having to put it off because, you know, stuff like COVID happens and everything else. So we haven't seen the full, I think, Liberty Media plan in full implementation yet. So I want to kind of hold my opinion on, you know, are we going into irrelevance or not, until we see what that plan is and see how it works.
Yeah, I think the one of the big sticking points for him was, you know, Andy, I think you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, the push for biofuels and, you know, to go green. Right now, Formula One has this idea to try to be 10% in biofuels coming up into, I think it was potentially for 21. I don't know. It may have been pushed to 22 now. But I think that was another big sticking point in Sebastian Vettel and that in his argument. And that's kind of where I agree with him. You know, right now he came out and said that Formula One has the most efficient internal combustion engine on planet Earth, which I don't think anyone can disagree with by a long shot. But he goes on to say that that means absolutely nothing because – it's so complicated that it can't be reproduced to any manufacturer that's ever going to be able to sell this engine or any kind of components from this engine into the mass, you know, population, which, you know, if you're trying to go green, then, you know, you're building an engine that's incredible, but you can't ever roll it out to the masses. So I think that was the big sticky point for him. And I agree with him on that. I think 10% is not enough. I think, you know, F1 has the goal of going fully biofuel within the next few years, which I think is definitely a must. But, you know, we've talked about a bunch of times, you got to simplify this engine. It doesn't do any good. Formula One's always been, you know, the pioneer of technology and motorsports and, you know, fuel efficiency and blah, 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 blah. And I do agree. They are slipping out from that. They are getting taken over by other racing series because of the fact that this engine costs $150 million to build and no one's ever going to be able to put this, you know, your Honda Civic's never going to see this. And that's a shame that we have an engine that, you know, will never be mass produced to the masses or any kind of, you know, component or spinoff from it. So that was his big sticking point, I think, as well, which I agree with.
Yeah, fair points. You know, it's important for Formula One to kind of lead the way with new technologies. And hopefully biofuel is the next one that Formula One can be a leader for. I'm just glad they're not trying to go more of an electric route because that's not something that would interest me. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of the episode, we do have a fan email. John, why don't you go ahead and read that for us?
Yeah, so Josh Wilson asked, so of all the new driver lineups, who do you think will be the most overshadowed between the two? And then on the flip side of that as well, who do you think will be the most surprising underdog? You know, i.e. Vettel's expected to beat Stroll, Verstappen's expected to beat Perez. You know, which one's going to be the most surprising and a good side of things. Andy, what do you think about this?
Well, in terms of overshadowed, I mean, that's really kind of tough to define in my world, but, I would say probably if it's anybody, it's probably going to be Ocon versus Alonso, simply because Fernando Alonso, wherever he has gone, and has always tended to try to dominate the conversation and dominate the team setup around him to whatever his liking is. So Esteban Ocon has his work cut out for him, I think, moving into 21. He's going to have to fight for, you know, this is the same argument we said about Alex Albon. Now it's in Esteban Ocon's corner. How much does he fight for the setup and the car that he needs to be able to be effective? He was showing better at the end of the year. He's going to have to keep up that momentum going into 21. Otherwise, he's going to get irrelevant really, really quickly. In terms of an underdog, I think you got to say it's Lance Stroll going up against a four-time world champion, but it's a four-time world champion with his wings cut. So I don't know if those two forces kind of even each other out, but I think Stroll's going to have to step up and to try to make sure that he's relevant in his own team.
Nice. James, what about you?
Yeah, so the overshadowed one, I was definitely leaning towards Ocon as well, but I could also kind of make a case. Maybe I'm not really making the case, but I know one that the team hopes is overshadowed, and that would have to be Nikita Mazepin. I'm sure Haas is praying that he's overshadowed by Schumacher and that all the attention is on Schumacher and him being a Schumacher and in his fourth Formula One season, instead of the attention being on Haas and the colossal fuck-up that is Nikita Mazepin. So as far as that goes, I think Haas is hoping for that one. As far as the most surprising underdog, this one's pretty tough because I could definitely see it playing out a few different ways. For the underdog I'm cheering for the most, I might say Checo here. I think it'll be for two couple reasons. One, I think he's got a shot to maybe contend with Verstappen a little bit. But what I'm really interested in seeing is him pushing the pace with Verstappen a little bit and how Verstappen responds. We talk all the time about how Verstappen's getting more and more mature. He's growing into himself and becoming a better racer for the most part. But now let's see what happens when he's racing somebody that knows what the hell they're doing and not somebody like an Albon or a Gasly who just falls on their face when they get the Red Bull. So somebody pushing Verstappen could be what gets him to the next level. So that's something I'll be watching for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess for me, the underdog, I agree with both of you, honestly. I hadn't really thought about the Mazepin spinoff from there, but that's a great point. Initial thoughts was certainly Ocon, to Andy's point. Alonso, he's always gotten the best out of the car, and it may not always been the best car in the world, but he seems to pull it out of there. You know, what he can do this year, I don't know, but and as far as the media attention, things like that, I think Ocon is going to be a distant past really quickly when it comes to Alonso being next to him in the garage. And then for underdog, I could certainly see that, you know, Perez being someone who's certainly going to challenge. I know James is going to want to hear this, but I definitely see Sainz as being an underdog as well. I think that, that's going to be a good pairing. I think that they're going to challenge each other. I think Sainz is going to push Leclerc harder than he's been pushed before, which may very well bring out, the best Leclerc that we've seen. So I think it's going to be a good battle, but I certainly don't think Sainz is going to roll over one least bit. So, I think the good thing is, anytime we're going into a season, we've got multiple selections for these things. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I'm actually happy to hear that, John, because I like Sainz too. Leclerc is my main guy for sure. But I want Sainz to push him. Same thing with Verstappen. This could be what unlocks the next level for Leclerc. And just like a young boxer that you start to like, or an MMA fighter or something, you want them to get challenged by the best because you want them to get hit in the jaw a few times and see how they respond to that, because a real champion will be able to come back and overcome that. So I look forward to Sainz bringing the challenge to Leclerc. I resent you saying that.
Yeah. Well, talk to me at midseason. Let's see how
this stuff goes. It'll be an interesting journey for sure.
I'm going to write this one down.
Yeah, don't remind me of this one later on. Deanna's taking notes right now. Like, ooh, I'm going to get James with this one later.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure on her way to Mississippi right now. She's
got
her sketch
pad
out.
Oh, man. All right. So I don't think I mentioned before, but so this episode is going to be the first of probably three total episodes of us doing our deep dives on drivers and teams. Our previous couple episodes that we end up splitting into two because the episode was epically long. We do tend to be long-winded at times, but that was more of our grades and kind of a topical high-level breakdown. Now we're going to get a little bit more in the nitty-gritty. So we're going to start with four teams tonight, and then we'll do three teams each of the next couple episodes. So The bottom two teams, we're going to start with Haas here, but Haas and Williams, I'm going to tell you right off the bat, we're not going to get too deep into them because there's really not much beyond what you see on the surface. So for Haas, they had a total of 3 points on the season, and that came from Grosjean getting a ninth-place finish in Germany and K-Mag getting a 10th-place finish in Hungary. So two points. Finishes for the entire season. That's 17 races, 34 chances in total. So not a great percentage there. Haas never qualified above 14th, and they only had 6 Q2 appearances between the drivers. So not great. A best moment for them, I guess we could say that Abu Dhabi was Haas's 100th Grand Prix appearance. So that's a good thing. I should have asked for Andy's help with this one. He got pretty good at finding nice things to say about Haas throughout the season. But, Andy, that's the best I could come up with. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I would give it – if I was giving them a moment, I would give it the pit call strategy that led them to be third and fourth in Hungary, even though they got a penalty, even though it was short-lived. It was 5 laps in.
It was a stroke of genius.
And who was going to say, given where they were qualifying – and given the fact that they started that race on wet tires, how the hell were they third and fourth after 4 laps?
That's actually a really fair point, Andy. Nice job, as usual. I think we would agree on their worst moment of the year, that being the response to the whole Mazepin mess, because that's been pretty epically bad, I think, one way to put it. And then to get into the drivers now, Romain Grosjean finished the season with a whole 2 points in 19th place on the table. Of the 800 laps he raced, only 89 were spent in a points scoring position. So not great for him.
Damn.
On a personal level, his best and worst moment, I'm going to say, was the same thing, and that was the crash. And anybody listening to this right now should probably know what I'm referring to. Pretty crazy moment. Maybe the craziest moment of the season, and what was a pretty crazy season for sure. And best and worst for him, because he really could have died, but he didn't. And that was probably the best outcome for him. So Kevin Magnussen, he finished in 20th place with a 1 point on the entire season. So this next line is pretty surprising after I tell you he got 1 point on the entire season. But technically, K-Mag was the only driver who did not finish any race in a position lower than where he started. So, figure that one out.
Wow.
Pretty crazy. Of course, it does include the fact that he DNF'd 7 times, which is the most of any driver. He had to finish the race, and he didn't do that 7 times. So I guess that kind of helped him out there. He did win the qualifying battle against his teammate Grosjean, and that was a close one, 8-7. I'd say his best moment was scoring 1 point in Hungary, and then his worst moment was, of course, the 7 different DNFs he had. Like I mentioned, most of any driver. So, Andy, I'll open it up to you first, since you pretty much were our Haas guy all year long as far as filling out the agenda goes. What did you think about their season overall? We gave you a grade already, but how'd you feel about it?
This was a struggle. I mean, for a team that has wanted to do more and wanted to be more, this was a sharp turning back to the kind of reality and the economic reality of Formula One. And I think that they have felt that probably more than a lot of teams. We've been speculating whether or not, they would even continue on with this. And it's, I guess it's a good thing that, that they're sticking with it. It's just been, I think it comes down to for Haas, bad Ferrari power unit equals kind of really bad results. I mean, they've gone so far in with that Ferrari partnership that it doesn't surprise me that in a year where we've seen Ferrari do have their, really bad struggles this year, lowest position in like 20 years in the points, that, Haas follows suit with that, because they're kind of a lesser, worse version of the Ferraris at this point. So, I mean, the car was really hard to drive. I know Grosjean has come out and has explained a little bit that it was something to do with there was a flaw in the rear suspension where it was changing like 3 or 4 degrees based on tire temperature and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was very, very obviously a flawed car. They didn't have the money to develop themselves out of it and struggled with a power unit. So, kind of really, really tough all the way around.
Fair points. John, you rated Haas with an F, which was tied with me and just lower than Andy with his D minus. So what would you see from Haas this year?
Yeah, I mean, I know we're not going to talk about Williams tonight, but I feel like going through a lot of the stats that you just threw out there, I think Williams is probably it'll be interesting to see, but I think they may be better on paper than a lot of the stats that you threw out there about Haas, which is just crazy to think that, you know, yes, they scored three more points and scored one position higher in the standings, but we give a lot of shit to Williams, but on paper, man, I mean, some of these things are really quite embarrassing. And the fact that, you know, only, you know, 14th, never qualified above 14th. I mean, that's, to me, that's shocking. I guess the Mazepin situation, I kind of put that down to 2021. So I try not to even count that towards this year and just kind of remove it. But it was just an embarrassing year. And, you know, we talked about them not having enough money to get themselves out of it. And I don't know if that's going to change moving forward. We talked about the Mazepin situation being a driver's only. I mean, thankfully, they've got Schumacher. I don't know what they're paying him, but obviously he's going to bring in a wealth of advertising, you know, backing along with that because of the name. So hopefully that helps. Hopefully they get some more funding that, you know, to just think a few years ago, you know, they were showing up on the grid and surprising the hell out of us, you know, and looking like this team that came out of nowhere. And, oh, my God, you know, this is a new future, you know, this customer type, you know, setup where you're getting parts from Ferrari and suddenly you're scoring in, you know, points on your debut and things like that. To go from that to where they are now is beyond shocking. So I expect better, but I don't know what 2021's hold. So I think it's gonna be a rough year for them.
Yeah, the prospects aren't looking great when you consider that last year they had the whole Rich Energy debacle, and yet this year they somehow probably look even worse. That's really saying something. And if you're pushing the Mazepin stuff off onto the 21 season stuff, they're not off on a great foot, man.
I was going to say that's not a really good start.
Yeah.
Well, I guess a positive to leave them on is that there's only one way for them to go at this point. And I think that's up. So fingers crossed for Haas.
James, I did think it was interesting when you were talking about the Grosjean crash situation. You said that not dying was probably the best situation for him. I agree with that.
I'd hope so.
Mark that down. It's one of the two things we 100% agree on.
I mean, I'm just trying to be honest here, Chad. all right, so enough of Haas. I've had my fill on them for hopefully a few episodes. Hopefully nothing stupid pops up between now and our next recording, but it could. It really could. So our eighth place team on the season was Alfa Romeo. Eighth place, 8 points. They scored 49 fewer points than 2019, and yet still were able to finish in eighth place in the constructors, thanks to Williams and Haas. So shout out to really bad teams. Both drivers split the points 4 apiece. This is their lowest point total since 2016, when they were known as Sauber. They only made it out of Q1 8 times, with both drivers making it to Q3 in Turkey. So that was a big moment for them. Giovinazzi won the quali battle 9-8. So that was super close. Even the sector times, if you break them down, were close. Gio just barely got the edge there, 27-24. And the gap to teammate was Gio's advantage by 0.013 or 13 milliseconds, which was the closest of any two teammates. So these are probably the most closely matched teammates we have on the grid for 2020. However, Kimi Raikkonen did win the race battle, 12-5, finished higher than Giovinazzi there, which probably isn't that surprising considering Kimi's wealth of knowledge and his veteranship there. If nothing else, the Romeos were more reliable than their brand's road cars by completing 1,902 laps, which was second only to Mercedes. I know, I thought you were gonna like that one. But honestly, they're not the Giulia looks cool, but just doesn't seem to be all that good of a car. But so they had 1,902 laps finished, which was second only to Mercedes. They had 4 DNFs on the season, so they had about half of the DNFs that K-Mag had, so that's pretty good. The high point, I'd say, for them, both drivers did make it to Q3, like I said, in Turkey, or possibly the San Marino Grand Prix for the double points finish, the only one for them for the season, when Kimi finished 9th, got the driver of the day that day, and Giovinazzi finished in 10th. Of course, their low point, there was many of these, but I gave it to their 70th anniversary race. That was the second one in the UK. Was their sixth straight double Q1 exit and only second time in Kimi's career that he qualified last on pace alone. So going into the drivers now, we got Kimi Räikkönen finished the year tied for 16th with his teammate Giovinazzi with 4 points. He did finish ninth twice. His best qualifying was eighth in Turkey, as I mentioned. His worst quality was 20th, as I mentioned, but he did do that three separate times, which is pretty crazy. Considering who the Iceman is and the career he's had. So that means his average starting position was 16th. It was like 16.5, which is not good. Not a good way to start the race, especially when you got that Ferrari motor in the back of your car. It's never going to help out there. That 4 points is the lowest total of his 18-year career. I mean, he did become F1's most experienced driver this year, completing more races, laps, and kilometers than anyone else. And that's a good thing I can say about Kimi's season, I guess. His season started with us wondering if this was going to be it for him. So it wasn't, or it isn't. I guess he's coming back, surprisingly. One surprising thing is he only finished lower in the grid than where he started twice this season. So that sounds pretty good again, but kind of like K-Mag. He didn't have the DNFs that K-Mag had, but when you're starting in 16th, it's kind of hard to finish behind where you started. Especially when you're Kimi Räikkönen. So I'd say his best moment of the year, tell me if I'm wrong here, but I'm giving it to the opening lap of the Portuguese Grand Prix, where he gained 9 places in the first lap. Unfortunately, though, finished the day in 11th, so didn't get any points there. His worst moments, of course, was qualifying 20th 3 different times. So quick dive on Kimi here. Do you think 2021 will now finally be his last season? John, do you think we're going to see him in 2022 with the redesigned cars?
That's a good question. Ferrari's got some good talent in their driver academy in F2. Probably another guy that should be on the grid as opposed to Mazepin. So I think that this may be the last year that we see both he and Giovinazzi. I mean, it was shocking to me. We talked about throughout the year just how off Kimi looked, but I didn't even realize it. 3 times he qualified last. I mean, that's crazy. I think that this is probably going to be the swan song for both these guys, unless we see something out extraordinary. And, whereas I just don't see that happening with Giovinazzi either. So I think that we may see an entirely new driver lineup potentially for them coming into 2022.
Andy, you got anything for Kimi?
You know, I mean, for a guy as experienced as he is, you know, sometimes you just you couldn't necessarily figure out where, you know, like the P20 3 different times, I mean, is just it kind of amazes me too, simply because you don't expect that from a guy. You would expect, you know, to eke out an extra 10th or two just based on the experience of, you know, where to put the car, regardless of its overall relative pace. I think this is another team where the big limiting factor is the car itself. Has Kimi specifically helped to contribute to the development of that car to try to make it better? I know I've heard Fred Vasseur in a couple of different times in team principals press conferences mention that they were bringing aero updates and that was kind of the focus for the year once they kind of realized their natural pace just wasn't there. So, I mean, from that perspective, has he been beneficial to the team? I don't know. Time will tell on that. We'll have to see what they bring in for next year. You know, it's kind of it's annoying to me as a fan to watch a guy who's as accomplished as he is struggle this much. Now, obviously, he's in a seemingly a good place mentally. He obviously continues to want to continue to do this, but at some point you have to be able to make way for the next. You mentioned, John, the Ferrari driver lineup or academy. There's several. You've got Robert Schwartzman. You've got Callum Ilott, who's, you know, they're just kind of going to be sitting. Schwartzman, I think, is going to continue to race in F2, but I think Ilott's been confirmed as a reserve driver, which means he's in a simulator now. Yeah, it almost would seem like if he can't bounce back big time in 21, he's got to start to thinking about making room for somebody better in 22.
And if the car is that shit, then if Kimi's actually contributing, which I mean, I I do want to believe that he is in some way, but if the car is still that shit, is it worth even paying Kimi's salary at that point? When you could bring in a couple of new guys. I mean, if you're going to be bad regardless, you know, might as well save yourself a few bucks and be bad a little bit cheaper. So, I mean, I know he brings a lot of, you know, brand recognition and stuff, just, you know, obviously being the pedigree of a driver that he is. But, you know, going back to James's point, I mean, it's just not, you know, the road cars aren't doing much, and certainly neither is the race car. I guess they won't be sponsoring our show anytime soon, unfortunately. Hey, just
he has, according to the Twitter I've seen, one epic Alfa Romeo commercial that I guess airs all the time on Sky in the UK. So I guess it just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating, because I guess it's one of the few commercials that they ever have. So for that, I guess that proves his purpose.
All right, I'm going to have to go YouTube.
If anybody from Alfa Romeo happens to be listening, just please know we are all complete sellouts, and we will edit this episode to make it sound like your cars are very, very good.
That awesome Kimi commercial. Have I mentioned that one?
I would love a Giulia. Yes.
I wonder if they're just like, I wonder from an aero perspective, if they've kind of pulled a Haas, and, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, within that Ferrari family, you know, there's been a lot of trading and of ideas and things like that. I just wonder if they just got off, and then through bringing, you know, similar to Haas, through bringing out updates and stuff, if they just continue to spin in the wrong direction. And at some point you're just, you know, throwing, you know, shit on the wall and seeing what sticks. And, you know, it makes me wonder how you can continue to get worse throughout the year on pace.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody's going to figure out, it's them. But before we get into Antonio Giovinazzi, to no one's surprise, we went a little long on this first segment, boys. So we're going to step away, take a quick break to hear from our main sponsor, Manscaped. And we'll be right back to talk about Giovinazzi and a couple more teams after that.
Listen up, fellas. 2020 sucked. It's almost the new year, which means new balls with our sponsor, Manscaped. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming, offering precision-engineered tools for your family jewels and helping 2 million men all over the world get rid of hair on their balls. If you let yourself go in 2020 while in quarantine, Manscaped is here for you to reboot and stay clean and shaved in 2021. You know, 2020, that sucked. But you know what, guys? It's time to get our games back online as we go into the next year. Manscaped is here to give you a fresh start in 2021 with their Perfect Package 3.0 that has all the right tools for the job. Come out of quarantine with clean balls thanks to the Lawnmower 3.0. This waterproof and skin-safe trimmer will reduce nicks to your two best friends. The third generation trimmer even has a light to give you the glow-up you need in 2021. It's also time to freshen up down there this new year. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? And for on-the-go freshness, you'll love the Crop Reliever, the ball toner spray. 2020 was awful, so make sure your boys are refreshed and ready for new beginnings in 2021. Manscaped even threw in their Shed travel bag to keep all your goodies stored comfortably. Speaking of the comfort, Manscaped anti-chafing boxer briefs are also included and are hands down the best underwear you'll ever wear. A guy with hairy balls is like the year 2020. Don't be that guy. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code OUTLAP at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP at manscaped.com. That's right. 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use our code OUTLAP. Happy New Year to you and your balls.
Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 46 of the OUTLAP F1 Podcast, where we are taking our first of three deep dives into the season. Quick thank you again to Manscaped. They help us out. Let them help you out by going to manscaped.com. Use code OUTLAP, O-U-T-L-A-P, all one word. Get yourself 20% off and free shipping. What's that you like to say about it, Andy?
I have the most efficient aero package on the market today.
That's right. We can't help you with your motor, but we can make it look good. All right. So,
AKA the Ferrari approach to everything.
You just got to add some additives and supplements in there, and you're good to go.
Deanna, I'm trying to cover for you.
All right, so we left off on Alfa Romeo. We discussed Kimi, and now we're going to move on to Antonio Giovinazzi. We all gave them – I'm sorry. I was the only one that was nice to Giovinazzi in our recap episode. I gave him a C- for a grade. You guys all gave him –
What the fuck were you thinking?
I don't remember. It was about a week ago now. I was in Tennessee. You know, the air is different down there. I was just feeling generous, I guess. Yeah, a little too much moonshine. You guys all gave him D pluses. I gave him a C minus. He's an okay kid. He did finish
like his hair, let's be honest.
Those long flowing locks. He finished tied for 16th with Kimi Räikkönen, as mentioned, with a total of 4 points. He finished in 9th place one time. His best qualifying was a 10th place in Turkey. His worst qualifying was 20th. He did that 3 times, just like Kimi. So his average starting position was just behind Kimi. He was about 16.6. He only finished ahead of where he started 11 of the 17 races. So that is not good when you're starting in 16th. He did score points 3 times with that 9th and then a couple 10th place finishes. I would have to say his best moment of the year is beating Kimi in the qualifying battle. I mean, that is not an easy thing to do. Kimi Räikkönen is an all-time great. And for somebody in his, second full season to beat him over the course of that season in qualifying is pretty cool. His worst moment, I would give that to probably Spain. He qualified in 20th place, lowest position of career at the time, and first time he had been slowest of all drivers, first time at that point. So overall for Giovinazzi, I'd say that any year that ends in new paper for a driver the following season has to be considered a success for someone like Giovinazzi. I feel if he can beat Kimi again in 2021, his seat should be secure for 2022. And that's when they bring in a junior Ferrari driver such as Ilott or Schwartzman, as we mentioned. I don't see them going the Haas approach and doing two young drivers. I mean, unless maybe Haas gets something right. We probably don't think so. And this two young, fresh drivers thing works out for them. I don't see Alfa pulling that same move. They're going to want to keep somebody in the car that that knows the car. And it seems there's got to be something about Giovinazzi behind the scenes that we just don't know about. He must be helpful either in the simulator or helping design the car. And we're just not privy to that information because for some reason they like him. Maybe it's just because he's Italian and Ferrari's got to have at least one of those guys on the grid. So, Andy, overall on Giovinazzi's season, how'd you feel about it? What do you see for the numbers?
A guy that's struggling to kind of stay relevant, I think. Only 4 points. It was positive that, you know, he's obviously taking it to Kimi a little bit in the qualifying battle. But obviously, you know, just like when we talk about Haas and we talk about this team, it's Ferrari-powered car that's struggling. And, you know, they had to resort to kind of getting – you know, flash points where they could. You know, one of those was, you know, the Portuguese Grand Prix where they started on the softer compound of tires, which fired up first and enabled them to do really well for about 4 or 5 laps. And then, you know, they became the moving chicane. Had really good Italian Grand Prix. Both cars did in that race before falling back. So other than some really good strategy calls for both these drivers, I think it was just kind of a tough struggle. But like you said, he does manage to keep his he did get new paper at the end of the year. And I think you're right when you say, you know, Ferrari wants to push an Italian driver. They're not ready to give up on the, on him yet. Probably hasn't done, anything to really, really hurt himself. So, you know, he's just going to have to, he's going to have to do some flashing next year and try to make himself seem like he stands out in a crowd because that Ferrari crowd is only getting larger.
Yeah, there is a lot of good young drivers coming up behind him here in the Ferrari program, which is exciting to see as a Ferrari fan. What do you think, John? Do you like Giovinazzi's season overall?
I mean, I guess it makes you feel a little bit better for Kimi when you see some of his stats and a lot of really amazing similarities between the two as far as tied in points. Both of them have 3 last place qualifyings. I guess going back to 22, I mean, I feel like they should have made a change this year. You know, if you're going into a new car, unless they really are going to keep both these drivers for the next couple of years, which just seems crazy to me, but you know, stranger things have happened. why not bring in new talent this year coming up, that being 21, and have them at least in your culture and somewhat around your engineers and your aero philosophy when you're going into a brand new car that's, you know, literally you're drawing from, you know, the ground up. To me, the timing of all this doesn't make any sense, because if you drop one or two next year, you know, it just, you don't have enough seat time, I think, to even benefit bringing in someone new. So at that point, it's like, you might as well just keep these guys around for a couple of seasons. It still shocks me as hell that Ferrari chose to put Schumacher in the Haas instead of the Alfa. I don't understand that one bit. I thought for sure they'd at least want it in, you know, an Italian brand, and, you know, someone that's very, very close to the Ferrari, you know, factory, you know, system and everything. But I just, from a year, as far as 2020 goes, I think, and to your point, to a guy that's trying to stay relevant, I mean, a lot of times we really forget that Giovinazzi is even there, similar to like a Kvyat. We just don't notice him half the time unless he's doing something dumb or getting wrecked by someone. So it's shocking that, you know, in a, what should be a mid-tier team, that, you know, we've got, at least on the Giovinazzi side, a guy that really has never done anything and really never impressed us in a single occurrence, honestly.
Which is also why it's weird how sometimes you still hear murmurs that, like, Ferrari would potentially want to groom him to be, like, the second driver on the big squad. And it's like, I've never seen what they maybe it's like a consistency thing. He's just kind of under the radar consistent. Because I feel like he doesn't make too many boneheaded errors compared to some of the other younger drivers on the grid. Like he wouldn't be my first pick if I was making a team, but he wouldn't be my last pick either, I guess. And it had to have been a tough position for Alfa Romeo's leadership, because going into next year, it's like you have this guy, this Kimi Räikkönen, this legend that says he wants to come back for another year. So it's got to be hard to tell him no. And then you have Giovinazzi, who it's like, I can see why we could move on from him and bring up somebody younger, but at the same time, he hasn't really done anything that makes us want to fire him. You know what I mean? And if Ferrari's giving them a deal on the engine, better be a pretty big deal after this year. But I feel like maybe their hands were a little bit tied on this one, but I don't think it'll be the same case going into 2022. So again, I don't see them doing two new drivers, but definitely probably going to get at least one.
I think they're almost at fault, opposite of kind of a 180 from Ferrari. You know, a lot of people, we gave Ferrari kind of a lot of shit in how they handled the Vettel situation, and certainly a lot of that was on Vettel as well. But it, on the flip side of things, maybe to Alfa's fault, the handling of Kimi and the fact that he wants to come back, and the fact, you know, they just said, okay, yeah, sure, come on back. You know, that may come back and haunt them in the long run as well. You know, not being Ferrari-esque and being stern with their drivers and their driver decisioning. So, yeah, well, I guess, you know, only the future will tell on that one, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time that a sports franchise holds on to, like, an iconic figure for a year or two too long. Some guys just don't know when to hang them up, unfortunately. So I think that pretty much covers everything we can say about Alfa Romeo. Let's move on to a different team. I'm going to hand it over to you, John, so you can tell us all about the fifth place team from this last year, the Frogs themselves, Renault.
Yeah, like you said, fifth place, 181 points on the year. Despite recording three podium finishes and scoring twice as many points compared to last year, they remain in the same championship position. So, again, on the championship side of things, it's got to be a little bit disappointing to finish in fifth, given the fact that they were in the running for third throughout most of the season. But on the plus side of things, they did score nearly double the amount of points this year. So, some things for qualifying from a team perspective. They had zero Q1 exits of the team, 12 Q2 exits, and then combined, they had 22 Q3 appearances. So 64.7% of the time, both drivers made it into Q3. So that's a hell of an uptick from where they were just a couple of years ago. Both cars made it to Q3 on eight different occasions for 47% of the season. Best qualifying of the year for the team was fourth for Daniel Ricciardo at Spa. The worst qualifying for the year was 15th by Ocon in Spain. Both drivers really struggled at that Spain qualifying. The average gap to their kind of perfect pace improved again in 2020. So 2018, they were about 2.2% down on their, you know, what should be their quote unquote perfect pace. 2019, they improved that to a 1.93, and then they improved that even more to a 1.57 in 2020. So it just goes back to show you just in the last 2 years how far that's come. Qualifying battle, it really wasn't a battle between the two. Daniel Ricciardo owned this thing 15-2. Wasn't the most dominating of any team in Formula One, but it was pretty damn close and pretty damn convincing as well. Average qualifying margin between the two drivers had Ricciardo at a 0.362 faster than Ocon. So that that alone is a pretty substantial margin between the two, nearly 0.4. And then on paper, they were 101.446% slower than their 2020 theoretical best pole time as well. So some interesting numbers there. I don't know if you guys we've got some race figures, but from a race standpoint, they scored points in every single race except for the Spanish Grand Prix. Again, both of them really struggled in that one. Both of them qualified pretty poorly in that as well. They scored their first fastest lap in over 10 years. First podium since 2011. They had three on the year. So, again, a big improvement there. Best finish of the year was second at Sakhar GP by Ocon of all drivers. You would have thought that Ocon would be the best, the highest finisher of the two. A total of five DNFs. They completed 1,840 laps with 1,409 of those being in the top 10. So pretty impressive there. They did complete 88.72% of all the laps on the year. And the race battle, again, similar to the qualifying battle, not really much of a competition, 14-3 with Daniel Ricciardo. So before I get into the drivers, James, anything from a stat standpoint, just kind of step a few. I know you're not the biggest Renault guy in the world, but we're going to go to you first.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the biggest thing was the five DNFs. I mean, they had five DNFs by like China last year, I feel like. So that's
yeah, as a team, yeah, probably.
that's a huge improvement for them. I thought the power was really there in that Renault power unit for sure this year. You know, they talked about it for how many years now, and it finally looked like they weren't lying this time for once. And the reliability was right there with it. So definitely big things to see there from Renault as a team. A lot of the battle stuff, no surprise there. Danny Ricciardo is a legit pro, and Ocon was coming back after a year of not driving at all. So wasn't surprised by any of that. But, yeah, that 5 DNF I think is a big indicator of what direction Renault's headed.
Yeah, for sure. And any thoughts?
Well, I think this is a team that is a testament to what happens when you have increased power and increased reliability. So, I mean, yeah, the 5 DNFs are still high, but they're not nearly as bad as they were in 19. And that Renault power unit, I mean, we've speculated, and I think we're right when we say it was probably the second best consistent power unit all year. Right up there with the Honda, which is kind of fun to say. Definitely better than the Ferrari power unit, just in terms of relative pace. So to me, what the question for this team is going to be, how much of these gains was Daniel Ricciardo's influence over the team, and how much of that is now walking out the door to my McLaren guys. So, you know, that's, I think, what's going to, you know, they've had some good momentum going into this end of the season. It's not where they wanted to be in total. Probably they wanted to be probably P4. They would have loved to obviously have P3. But what's going to be important for them is, can they keep the momentum going and do they not regress? You know, and as we've said before, Alonso is a major big personality. So he's going to come in and he's going to reshape that team very, very, very quickly. I've seen it happen with McLaren because that's what he did. And whether or not he's right to do that or not, that's a philosophical question. But they're gonna cater to what he wants because he's the name that he is. So does that keep the momentum going? Well, that's the question mark for 2021.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, they're losing a top tier driver and gaining a top tier driver. But yeah, I think the Alonso esque that they're talking about reshaping the team. I mean, that could go really well, or that could go terribly wrong. And it could really derail momentum for 2021 if things don't quite line up, or his personality doesn't quite mesh up with other people and things like that. So it's a hell of a gamble from them But it's one that could certainly pay off for them as far as, you know, from a monetary standpoint. Moving into the actual drivers. So Esteban Ocon finished 12th in the season, 62 points on the year. He did record his first ever career podium again at the Sakhar GP. So it's definitely got to be the highlight of his career and certainly his year. From a qualifying standpoint, again, zero Q3 exits. He had 9 Q2 exits and 8 Q3 appearances. So not too shabby. Just a little bit under 50%. Best qualifying of the year was fifth at the Syrian GP. His worst qualifying, again, we talk about Spanish GP, was 15th. His average qualifying position was 9.94. Average starting position was 10.06. It's a little bit interesting that, you know, I don't know if with some grid place penalties or something like that. I don't remember exactly what the details were on that one. The average gap to his own best qualifying potential pace was a 0.064, so not too far off, honestly, on there. And the average gap to his teammate per sector, he was .101. So actually on pace, a pretty good battle between the two there, but Ricciardo just seemed to have the edge every time. From a race sprint standpoint, he scored 34% of Renault's points. He scored points in 10 different races. Best finish, as we mentioned, in second was the Sakhar GP. He did have 4 of the 5 DNFs for the team. Completed 83% of the laps this year, 560 of those in the top 10, 95 of those in the top 5, and 27 being in the top 3, I believe mostly from one particular race. He gained positions in 9 races and lost positions in 2, and also finished where he started in 2 different races. And then he had 11 consecutive top 10 finishes. Any thoughts on Ocon? Andy, what about you?
Needs to be more relevant is what I hear in all of this. You know, it's like, well, where was he? And part of that, I think, was the year layoff. I think that just it just goes to show how important, you know, being around, not even just being involved like on a simulator in the sport, but being in the paddock, being, you know, hands-on in the car with the feeling and all that, you know, it's, that's still a part of it. You know, you can simulate your all you want, but there's a feel element to actual racing that I think these stats kind of pan out. 'Cause we didn't really see him really kind of find his own until the end of the year. So I, you know, obviously had the really good finish at the Sakhir Grand Prix. So that was a highlight on what was kind of an otherwise really, really dull year, I thought.
Yeah. Relevance is a good way to put it, Andy. And it's not going to get any easier for him because Ricciardo overshadowed him, one, personality wise and really performance wise. Alonso is going to overshadow him ridiculously big personality wise and probably skill-wise too, but we'll see. I mean, Fernando's been off for a year now, and Ocon really came on at the end. So, I mean, as a non-Renault fan, I'm really hoping Ocon brings it to Alonso right out of the gate, race one next year, because I want to see those fireworks going off for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the difference, though, I think, but between Ocon being off a year and Alonso. I mean, Alonso was still pretty damn busy. Yeah, he wasn't in Formula One, but I mean, I felt like every time you turn on some kind of news, he was in some kind of, you know, some type of cockpit doing some type of form of racing. So, you know, certainly wasn't just sitting around doing anything. And I know Ocon was doing a lot of simulator work, but I mean, nothing really beats that hands-on experience, even if it's not an F1 car. So, I mean, that could be an interesting situation when it comes to the two.
I actually think this is a team where we could see some inter-team fireworks, you know, between do they come together and not respect each other's space, you know, on track type of thing, you know, unless there's ground rules laid out, you know, really early on. And then, you know, also watch for the team radios in this one in 21, because I think these could be interesting.
Well, I mean, both these drivers are certainly not shy and not I guess removed from inner team conflict, you know, even dating back to Ocon's original stint in F1. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good point, Andy. There could be some rather unique situations, especially if these two come together on track. And you better believe the first time that Ocon's in front of Alonso and holding him up, there's going to be a hell of a good conversation on the radio. Hopefully F1 broadcasts it, but
Well, John, what do you think the chances are we hear Alonso referring to Ocon as a GP2 driver?
Give it about 9 races into the season. I think it's certainly a possibility. We'll see how long that love lasts. Moving on over to Daniel Ricciardo, 5th in the standings, 119 points in the year. He recorded 2 podiums in the year and to finish 5th in the standings. From a qualifying standpoint, again, 0 Q1 exits, 3 Q2 exits. He did have 14 Q3 appearances. Pretty damn impressive there. Best qualifying was 4th at Spa. Again, worst, 13th in Spain. His average qualifying position was a 7.71. Average starting position was a 7.59. So a pretty, almost 3 grid place positions above his teammate there. The average gap to his best theoretical pace was a 0.089. So still pretty close there. And then we mentioned the average gap to his teammate per sector was about a tenth up per sector. From a race standpoint, he scored 66% of Renault's points, scored points in 14 different races. Really, really impressive there. Best finish was 3rd twice. Only 1 DNF on the year, completed 979 laps for, it was 94.41% of the year. 849 of those laps were in the top 10, 328 in the top 5, and 64 in the top 3. He gained positions in 10 races, lost positions in 3, and finished where he started in 3. So, again, when you go back to that kind of comparison between he and Kimi and Giovinazzi, gaining 10 places or gaining positions in 10 different races when you're starting, in 7th versus starting 16th, I mean, that just shows you just the comparison between these drivers. So I don't know, any initial thoughts on them?
Yeah, I mean, I love Danny Ric, and I am so glad I can actively root for him again. his time at Renault was just not great for me. Because I mean, he's a great driver, and just another reason that I really hope McLaren nails it with the Mercedes power unit coming in, because any chance Danny Ric gets to be at the top of the grid and mix things up with those top guys is always exciting for us, the fans. He's typically the latest on the brakes, always looking for that gap. So for him to be up at the top part of the table there is going to be fun to watch, and to actively root for is just going to be really a nice treat. I'm sure Andy's pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I think he's going to do really well next year. At least I'm hoping that, so long as the power unit is good. We saw some reliability issues near the end of the year, which kind of concerns me. But other than that, I think it should be, if they've put in the effort that I think they have to marry that power unit to their chassis, I think they'll do fine. But in terms of his year this year, I mean, this is dragging his team. This is what they paid him for. This is why they signed him, to do exactly what he did this year. He helped develop the car. These numbers clearly say that he was the one responsible for keeping that team relevant and in the fight as long as they were. So, I mean, hats off to him. I thought he had probably his best year outside of Red Bull that he's ever had. And you got to see a little bit more of his personality when he wasn't, tied into that Red Bull Academy. I still think that's a major factor with drivers who come up in the Red Bull Academy, is they just get, they're so indebted to Red Bull for their careers that they can't step outside of themselves. And it took, I think, Ricciardo a couple of years to adjust to being able to step outside of what he knew and able to influence. And once he found his voice, look what they did. So he did a really, really nice job this year. The question is going to be, again, for Renault, do they keep it going? But I think for Ricciardo, I think the arrow's pointing very, very up.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a really great point, Andy. I mean, I 100% agree with you. This is exactly what they paid him to do. Not only did he help develop that car, but he really helped change the culture at Renault. And, yes, they're not winning races, but basically he brought along a winning mentality to that team. And going into next season, whereas going into this prior season, I'm sure they certainly thought, P3 in the standings is probably a long shot that was, that they had no business being a part of. Now they feel like they can compete. And when you have a team that has that confidence rolling into them, I mean, you may see some great things out of them just because of the fact that the team, the engineers, everyone's kind of rolling in off that high. Hopefully Alonso doesn't kill it, but for their sake, but yeah, I mean, they got every penny out of this deal from him. And I think he's better off for it, and certainly the team is as well. So
yeah, that's a good point, John, because now that they see that they had a legitimate shot at third place all the way through the season, so now they truly believe as a team that they belong up there. So now the results should follow that. But like you said, we'll see how Alonso can blow that up and get egg all over all of their faces, for sure. But enough about Renault. Now we move on to Andy, and he's going to tell us a little bit about Racing Point.
So Racing Point was the fourth place team with 195 points on the season. This was their most successful season since 2017. They also scored their first race win since 2003. As we've talked about many times, they were docked 15 points for fitting technically illegal rear brake ducts. That would have given them P3 had those points remained. Had both drivers test positive for COVID, which meant we got to see the super sub Nico Hülkenberg on the grid to the rescue twice. Two podiums for each driver in 2020. The Sakhir GP, where they scored their victory with P1 and P3, was the first. Was this team's first double podium since they were Jordan back in 1998. Qualifying battle went 10-4 in favor of Sergio Checo Perez. The race battle ended up going 8-5 in favor of Sergio Checo Perez. The highest qualifying position was a pole position, which Lance Stroll scored at the Turkish Grand Prix. The highest race finish, as we talked about, was first in the Sakhir Grand Prix. So overall, very, very strong year for Racing Point. You know, we had the whole Tracing Point scandal with the copying of the Mercedes, but it looks like they've been able to take that concept and get themselves way, way higher in the standings than they would have liked. Probably should have finished P3 on relative pace, but didn't quite get there. A little bit of lack of reliability near the end really, really cost them, I thought.
Yeah, definitely the reliability is what kind of bit him in the ass there. As you mentioned, that Mercedes power unit started to get a little questionable towards the end of the year. So it'll definitely be something we got to keep an eye on, because I know Ferrari's going to come back with an awesome motor next year. Maybe that's just me. But yeah, biggest thing for me for Racing Point is four podiums total and a freaking race win. So, I mean, that's awesome for Racing Point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and the biggest kind of takeaway from that, it certainly doesn't surprise me seeing the qualifying battle that Perez is kind of the driver there, which is unfortunate that he's won't be on that team next year, but at least he'll be on the grid. But the race battle was actually a lot closer than I thought. I mean, I was surprised that Lance Stroll, relatively speaking, held his own in the race battles between the two. It'll be interesting to see kind of what the deep dive stats in between the two standings are, or between the two drivers are, but you know, for a guy that we give a lot of shit for, I mean, certainly, you know, being Lance Stroll, he did, at least on paper, seems to hold his own a lot more than what I originally saw from my view from the Lazy Boys here in the basement down here. So
I will, we'll just go right into Lance Stroll's individual stats. He finished in 11th in the driver standings with 75 points. His average finish was 10.44. He completed the fewest laps of any driver in 2020, outscoring his teammate in only four of the 17 Grand Prix in 2020. That having been said, by pure results, he was, believe it or not, one of the most improved drivers compared to 2019, probably mostly the car, but he gets that. Had a really, really rough second half of the season until the very, very end of it. He scored no points from the Tuscan Grand Prix until the Turkish Grand Prix. That was four races. He really, really struggled during that. His high point of the season would have to be the pole position at the Turkish Grand Prix. His low point of the season would probably be the Bahrain Grand Prix, where he finished P19. As for Sergio Checo Perez, his average finish was 7.40, scored more points in 2020 than any other year. So this was his best year in Formula One. When he could finish, he scored. Other than DNFs, he was in the points every race where he saw a checkered flag. So that was very important for him. Career best finishes in 2020 with the victory at the Sakhir Grand Prix and a second at the Turkish Grand Prix. He was let go of the team in spite of being the team's consistent point scorer, but all was not lost as he will pair with Max Verstappen at Red Bull in 2021. For me, the high point for him has to be the secure Grand Prix victory. That was an awesome moment for him. His low point would have to be either the Bahrain Grand Prix DNF, or you could also tie it in with the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix DNF, so which really, really hurt the team and basically did cost them P3 in the constructors.
John?
Yeah, I mean, going back to Lance, I almost wonder if, like, if to me, Turkey had to been I know Bahrain was terrible on this that whole weekend, but to be leading that race for a decent amount of time and to finish, I think, what was it, like P9 when it was all said and done, I mean, that's that one's going to sting, I think, for a while. It's going to hold with him.
Yeah, what could have been, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And then, you know, like going back to my original point about Lance kind of holding his own, at least somewhat with Checo, you know, certainly Checo outperformed him, but they both had series of bad lucks. Checo more on the reliability side and Stroll just had all kinds of issues. But, you know, if you take away those bad lucks, and even if they were just if Lance were to finish in those four races that he had a streak there, I mean that there that could potentially change your whole entire race battle between the two. So, again, props to the kid. Definitely most improved from 2019.
Yeah, for me, you know, Sergio Perez was my overall driver of the year, and just his overall consistency and performance throughout the year was just completely impressive. You know, you mentioned that every time he finished a race, which is more often than not, of course, he was in the points every single time. So that's incredible. And to get his first victory was just one of the top moments of the year easily. And just with everything going against him at the time when we really thought he wasn't going to be in Formula One in 2021, to get that win and then ultimately to get that seat at Red Bull, where, I mean, I expect him to win again next year with that Red Bull. I don't see why he shouldn't. With multiple podiums. So I'll be rooting for him all of next season. And then Lance Stroll, you know, me and John have been giving Lance Stroll shit since day one of Outlap F1 podcast.
Yeah. Day one, yeah.
Yeah, we're like
day zero, actually.
It's actually bonded over hating Lance Stroll. So he means a lot to us on a personal and professional level. But, you know, he got a few different monkeys off his back, I think, this year. Most of those revolved around qualifying performances. You know, it went from, is he going to get out of Q1 to, I mean, he was basically out of it all the time. And then to get that that pole position was pretty unexpected. A great lap by him to get that done. And, you know, I want to say he took an overall step forward. But in reality, I maybe he's even with where he started just because the off-the-track stuff, the personal stuff is just still pretty tone deaf to a lot of different things and just not a likable driver in my eyes. So yeah, I think race wise, he had a much better year. I'm just curious to see what's going to happen with Racing Point now, Aston Martin with Perrin, Stroll with Vettel. I don't know. I know John, you've got some high hopes for Vettel at least, but I don't know how that's going to work out for Lance or Vettel. So,
I mean, on paper, they should be a good team again. I read an article this week that, you know, obviously the 15 points hurts them because it drops them down to P4. But as a team, apparently they really have no regrets in the tracing points saga. I mean, what they did was pretty ingenious. The fact that no one else had ever done it before, kind of shocking. And, you know, I've said it before, I disagree with the 15-point penalty because of the fact that they brought the FIA in from day one and told them exactly what they're going to do. It wasn't until other teams created a stink about it, the FIA did what they did and suddenly changed their mind, which goes shocker. That's never Formula One history. But yeah, I mean, I have pretty high hopes for at least for the team and certainly for Seb next year. And I think Lance, as long as he can contribute to that team, I think they're going to have a pretty good season. There's no reason that they should not be well within the P3 battle next year.
Agreed. Andy, anything else on Racing Point?
No, I think I pretty much said what I wanted to say about them. I mean, you know, this is a team that I think they're going to be – this is another one. It's going to, I think, going to be a fascinating dynamic to see how Vettel races with Stroll next year. And again, if these two come together, you know, what happens then? And then where does the team fall down on it, you know, given the Stroll connection? But I think this is a team where if there's a new power base in Formula One that is percolating, it's coming out of these guys, especially with the Lance Stroll money, with the consortium, now with Aston Martin and a board coming in. This is now, you're going to have kind of a three-headed monster between Mercedes, I think Racing Point and Ferrari, all battling for the power with these next rules. So it's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top of it, because it's all there for the taking right now, because nothing is set.
I'll tell you what I'm most worried about for next year, guys. It's do they get this livery right? Because they've got so much potential here to make one of the most badass liveries on the grid, but they could easily jack this up if they put, you know, a little bit too much pink in there or whatever the hell is going on. I don't know. But I'm looking forward to it, man. I mean, for the first time in my life, I may potentially buy myself a Sebastian Vettel merchandise. Can't believe I'm ever going to say that before, but I'm looking forward to having some Aston Martin grit, you know, gear in the grid and or in the closet. And it certainly hell is not going to be Lance Stroll. So maybe I can get like you know, non-driver specific, you know, just team specific shirt or something. But yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. Obviously, we got the announcement this week. You know, they are official Aston Martin. And so looking forward to some cool things coming out of there.
Yeah. Kudos on whoever runs their Twitter, cause they dropped it at midnight in Central Time. Like that tweet came out literally. I don't know how they managed to do it on January 1, but kudos for you guys for doing that.
I didn't notice that, Andy.
That was Brighton. I was pretty much asleep by that point. So yeah. No 2020 celebration.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the potential fireworks between Vettel and Stroll. It's like the more we talk about the 2021 driver teammate matchups, the more I realize how much potential there is for some craziness between teammates next season, which we will definitely get into when we get on to our preview episode. I'd say probably about a month and a half from now, which is also crazy to think about because practice isn't that far away.
Or it's called spring training. It's not that far away.
I mean, it's in spring. It's kind of training, I guess.
Well, it's
yeah. I mean, I
think testing this year is going to be fascinating because with only 3 days, each driver is only basically going to have a day and a half. There better not be any like bugs in the software or anything keeping the cars in the garage. Otherwise, you're not going to be ready.
Or better not be a Williams and just not have a car. Right. Period. So. You better show up and be ready to go. Yeah, get that thing fueled and get it on the track because it's, you know, I know we always try to watch as much as we can. 3 days is going to be fun. Sometimes it drags on even a little long for us in prior years. You know, the fourth, fifth, sixth day. Sometimes you're like, all right, well, only so much you can talk about from a commentary standpoint. But 3 days is going to be really action packed. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know how much work I'll get done during those 3 days.
Yeah, can't wait to get into that and break it all down. But before we get to that, we're going to have two more episodes coming out of our deep dives. Next episode, about a week away, we'll record that one, the next three teams, and then we'll finish it off with the third episode the week after that. So still plenty of good content coming for you all wonderful fans out there. You know, we appreciate you guys listening. Make sure you go onto our website. You can find all our old episodes, all of our old tweets. Give us a follow on Twitter if you haven't already, and a 5-star review would be much appreciated. It'll really help us keep the lights on around here. But yeah, I think that about covers it for our first in-depth review of the season. For Andy and John, I'm James, and we'll see you next time.
And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.